This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Later this hour, we're going to learn about what's called the manicure movement. It's a campaign to raise awareness about child abuse as a national health crisis. We're joined by the CEO of the Children's Network of Southwest Florida, which is partnering with the nonprofit Embrace Families and challenging men and women to paint their pointer fingers blue, representing the one in five children who experience abuse. But first, because of the plastic trash created by humans, uncountable wildlife victims have suffered and continue to suffer throughout the oceans and across the land. This is an unfortunate fact. The plastic polymer was invented in 1907, and other than what has been burned, all of that plastic, more than 8 billion tons, still exists somewhere on Earth. Most all of the sea salt tested in the U.S. has microplastics in it, and reports of whales and other marine life whose stomachs are filled with plastic are becoming commonplace. We're joined today by a woman who knows a thing or two about the problems of plastics and the many ways that we've harmed our environment. Dr. Terry Root is a senior fellow emerita in the Woods Institute for the Environment at Stanford University. She was also a lead author of the Intergovernmental Panel for Climate Change Fifth Assessment Report that in 2007 was co-awarded the Nobel Peace Prize with Vice President Al Gore. She'll be giving a presentation about plastics in the oceans and environment this Friday evening in Punta Gorda. Dr. Root, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
And as always, we invite our listeners to join the conversation. The number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK on Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So can you take us all the way back to the beginning? The plastic polymer was first created in 1907. What can you tell us about the origin of it?
The origin, I'm not sure I can tell you much about the origin, but I can tell you that from 1954, when it really started becoming very, very prevalent, until 2015, we had over 448 million tons of plastic production globally. And from 2000 to 2015, over 40% of that 448 million tons was actually made. So we are really turning into a plastic-making society.
At what point did anyone realize that this is going to be a problem?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think what we realized was that the plastics really doesn't biodegrade at all. All it does is just break up into little tinier and tinier and tinier pieces. And so now what we have are, basically we have all, as you said in your introduction, all of the plastic that has not been incinerated still occurs all around the world. And we need to start doing something about the single-use plastic bags and plastic bottles and things like that that we are just throwing away, and all it's doing is breaking up and going up into the oceans, pretty much.
Is there any one culprit that is worse than others? I'm thinking of the single-use plastic water bottles with the rise of bottled water. Is that something that we're looking at, or is it a larger industrial-type thing?
No, it's primarily the single-use things that we're using, things like plastic bags, plastic straws, plastic bottles. In America, in 2015, we actually used about 111 billion plastic beverage bottles, and that was for all the people in the U.S. So, in general, the Americans purchased about 346 bottles per person in the year 2015, which you add that up for the fact that we had about 321 million people in the U.S., that adds up to over 100 billion plastic beverage bottles that one year. And again, that plastic just is breaking down, and only 9% of those bottles were recycled. So some of them ended up in landfills, and many of them have ended up in the ocean.
So how do they end up in the ocean, though? I mean, are people just dumping trash in the ocean? Do they just kind of blow their way in there? Because I think people feel like when they throw something in the trash, it's going to probably end up in a landfill. How does it go from a landfill to the... What's the trajectory here?
Yeah. What's the trajectory? Well, basically, what happens is you throw it away, and sometimes the wind comes along and blows it along. There's an awful lot of people who just throw things out, and it just washes down rivers into the oceans that way. So, yes, a lot of it goes into landfills because most of us put things into trash, but there are an awful lot of folks that don't put things in trash and just throw them out, and they end up in the oceans.
So when people put things in the recycling bin, do they always end up getting recycled?
Ooh, that's a good question, especially now that China is no longer buying our plastics. We're not real sure what all is going to happen with the plastics now. Yeah,
I wonder
that's
what
a
kind
good question.
I'm wondering what kind of oversight there is or accountability for places. That's going to be a local question I'm going to ask here, and I don't know if there's any kind of national oversight on accountability for recycling and hauling it away, and what do they really do with it when it's over, when they take it out?
Well, the other thing that I find interesting is that two states in the U.S. have actually banned plastic bags. So we have plastic bottles and plastic bags. Two states have banned them, California and Hawaii. And Florida has actually banned the banning of plastic bags. So we cannot ban plastic bags. Individual cities cannot do that. Coral Gables is actually fighting that legally right now to see if they can indeed ban plastic bags. But having plastic bags right now in the U.S., each person uses about 365 bags a year. That's one a day pretty much. That's compared to in Denmark, the average person uses 4 bags per year.
That's
we
impressive.
Need to stop using this.
Well, we've had this conversation on our show a number of times about plastic bag bans. It's a tongue twister.
And, yes, it is.
And we've had a couple of places here, Fort Myers Beach, I believe, banning the plastic straw, which a lot of people have really gotten on to getting rid of plastic straws. However, they're still poking holes in plastic lids with paper straws now. So it seems like they're targeted individual items. And I think that straw thing came after the disturbing video of the sea turtle that had the straw in his nose.
Coming out of its nose. That's
yeah.
Right.
Yep. That poor guy. But I understand the emotional response to that. But a plastic bag ban is something that I know that communities over here on this coast have been watching what happens with that legal case with Coral Gables and waiting to see what kind of legal standing they have before they start investing in a lawsuit like this. But what do you see as a major player that's trying to keep the state from allowing communities to ban plastic bags?
I'm sorry, I really can't answer that. I don't know what is keeping Florida from banning it. We're like Hawaii, when you don't put things in the landfill, they end up in the ocean. We're surrounded on three sides by the water, and when we throw things away and it doesn't go into landfills, it goes right into the ocean, and we really need to be keeping the plastics out of the oceans because the plastics in the oceans are really damaging our wildlife dramatically.
And we're talking about stopping using plastics. And one of the things that was brought up in the beginning of our conversation was only the plastics that have not been incinerated. All the plastics that have not been incinerated are still out there floating around in landfills or in the ocean. What does incinerating plastic do? Does that harm the air?
Oh, my God, yes. It puts up toxins that are really quite bad. You really need to be quite careful when you're incinerating plastics, because you get all sorts of I don't know what it is, but burning PVCs, for instance, puts in organochlorides that are just horrific to you. So you really, and dioxins are coming out. So burning plastics is not a thing that you want to be doing.
Yeah, not the favorable route to take. I just wanted to ask about that to clarify it in case someone was thinking, well, let's just burn it all. If you're just joining the show today, I'm talking with Dr. Terry Root. She's a senior fellow emerita at the Woods Institute for the Environment at Stanford University. She'll be giving a presentation this Friday, April 12th, at the Congressional United Church of Christ in Punta Gorda. And if you'd like to add your voice to our conversation, give us a call now at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. And we do have a caller on the line. This is Roger from Naples. Roger, what would you like to ask about?
Yes, hi, good afternoon. I was curious. I've seen several articles in regards to India. They have some pilot projects where they're processing the plastic and using the resin as a in road building. And some of these projects, as I understand it, the roads have been in place for many years, and they're holding up extremely, extremely well. So is that something that we could look at in terms of processing the plastic into something that would not get into the environment?
Repurposing plastic is a really good thing to be doing. And in road building, the thing that's nice is that in areas, they use plastics in areas where it gets very, very warm. And asphalt, when it gets quite hot, can kind of get kind of mushy. And if they put plastics in it, they found that it actually doesn't allow it to be quite as mushy. And it really strengthens it and gives it some more resilience. So it really is a good use there. A lot of things can be used for... from plastic, when we recycle plastics, like the plastics that are making fake wood now that doesn't have termites and things like that, that works beautifully too. My partner, he actually just bought a T-shirt that is made from plastic bottles, so they're actually making material out of it too. So there's a lot of things that we can be doing. We just need to put our thinking caps on and come up with a lot of good things to do, because we've got to get rid of a lot of the plastic that's around, yes.
Yeah, I've gotten one of those T-shirts. I got to say, it's remarkably soft, considering it's a recycled plastic bottle.
I agree. I agree completely.
They're really not bad. Do you remember when you first heard about that giant patch of plastics floating out in the Pacific Ocean?
Oh, I couldn't believe it. And then when I started seeing pictures of it, it just almost made me sick to my stomach.
It's pretty large now, isn't it? I think it continues to grow.
It does continue to grow, and the thing that we have to remember is it's not growing just on the surface, it's also growing deeper. So the plastics are going quite deep into the ocean, and right now we're putting in about 8 million tons of plastics are going into the ocean per year. That's 8 million tons. That is a lot of plastic going in per year.
It's a lot of raw materials for T-shirt making and or the fake wood.
That's exactly right. Actually, I have a statistic that if you took that 8 million tons and made it into Lego bricks, and somebody got industrious and put those Lego bricks together, that we could actually build 19 life-size Empire State Buildings and have some left over. That's how much plastic is going into the ocean every year.
And we're talking about the big pile that's visible, that you can see that huge plastic patch. But one of the issues that I think you're going to be talking about is microplastics. This is where they break down to little tiny things that you can barely see. Can you tell me a little bit about those and the problems that those create for wildlife?
Well, the trouble with plastics in general is kind of like a sponge, and it will soak up toxins. And so plastics in the ocean do soak up some toxins. But then when all of this breaks up, it forms such small pieces that you really can't see them. You can a little bit with your eyes, but not really. They're the size of a salt grain. And they did a study, and they found that in 100% of the sea salt tested had microplastics in it. And I had a woman in one of my talks say that she didn't believe me. And then later I got an email from her, and she says, I went home and I dumped all my sea salt into a bowl and put in water And down in the bottom of the bowl, after everything had melted, all the salt had actually gone into the water, there was indeed plastics. So it's not just hurting animals, and it is hurting animals dramatically. It's also hurting us. So we really shouldn't be eating sea salt right now. You should be eating Himalayan pink salt. But it is hurting, you know, turtles feed plastic bags. They think that they're jellyfish. It's hurting seals. It's hurting birds and seabirds and fishes and whales and dolphins and things like that, all in the seas. And it's really quite damaging.
Well, and then we talked a little bit on this show and other segments when we talked about bioaccumulation of these microplastics, where a small organism eats the bio, the little tiny microplastics, and then that becomes part of their flesh in some ways. And then a larger fish comes along and eats that. And then it ends up becoming a kind of almost, I don't want to say a different animal, but a different organism within the animal.
Yeah. And then you have to think that we're actually eating those fish, and that the plastics that are in the flesh then come into our being, and they're in us. And when there's toxins in it, we really don't want that in us. We really don't.
Well, and if you say that they are little sponges of toxins that aren't necessarily just the plastic itself, it's kind of concerning what they're carrying along with them and what kind of toxins are surviving that digestive process and becoming part of the next animal.
That's right. And that can actually cause cancer, too, because things like PCBs and DDT and things like that and dioxins have been found in these microplastics.
Oh, so those are some of the toxins that are associated with the plastics that we know are that can lead to cancer.
Yes. Yes, very much so.
Have we passed the point of no return, though? I mean, it seems like plastics are everywhere. It's not going away. As you mentioned earlier, the production of it and the manufacture of it and use of plastics continues to grow. Where are we at now? I mean, it seems kind of critical.
I think our plastic society is still going to continue to grow and grow and grow. We're on an exponential curve going up quite a bit higher. Where is it going to stop? I really don't know. But what we do have to do is we've got to figure out a way to corral all of that plastics. And there is work that is ongoing to try and do something about these huge plastic gyres that are in the oceans to try and contain them. But we really do need to do something about producing so much plastics. The other thing you have to worry about, what I study actually is climate change, and that was one of the ways I got into this plastics issue, is it turns out that about 6% of the oil that is produced goes into plastics. And the trouble with plastics is for every pound of plastic that you make, you put up 6 pounds of CO2. So we're also contributing to global warming when we're making plastics. So it's not a good thing to have around for many, many, many reasons, but we're going to be making plastics for a very long time. So if we could just do away with the single-use plastics right now, it would make a huge, big start.
And I was listening to a report last week after the report of the whale that washed up with a belly full of plastic.
Yeah.
Somebody was talking about single-use plastics and then saying something about using those bags to go out and then pick up after your dog or whatever and then throwing that in your trash bin. That makes it more than a single-use plastic. Is something like that even enough, though?
Oh, my gosh. It's a start. Let's put it that way. It's a start. But what I would really strongly suggest is there's a lot of things that we can actually do. We can stop taking any plastic bags from shopping centers. So whenever you're going shopping, take your own cloth bags. That's an easy, easy, easy thing to do. An easy thing to do is to not have any plastic bottles. You can carry your own metal bottles. Don't buy things that are in plastic bottles. You can make that choice, and that will make a big difference. No straws. It takes a while, but after a while, you learn to say when you order a drink, please, I don't want a straw. or I only want a paper straw, that type of thing. Don't use plastic wrap. You don't have to use plastic wrap. You can use reusable dish covers, or just put a plate over the bowl that you're trying to wrap up if it's or trying to store something in. There's a lot of things. The other thing with styrofoam is try to avoid styrofoam at all costs. It doesn't biodegrade. It really persists in forms that animals use a lot, and you need to really avoid that. And we can. We don't need to have eggs in styrofoam cartons. We don't need to have coffee cups that are made out of styrofoam. There's other things that we can be using, and we certainly don't need to have doggy bag containers that are made out of styrofoam. So there's a lot of things that we can do. We have to just do it.
It's kind of interesting. It seems like we're seeing, I don't want to say a sea change, but a little bit of a change at least, as far as...
A little bit of a change.
I mean, maybe a pond change, puddle. But if mm-hmm. it, where we're having some private companies that are using alternatives to plastic, that are using biodegradable, they call it biodegradable plastic, but it's not really plastic, with different materials. So we're seeing sometimes in the private sector some of these changes being made in response to demands of consumers. But you can see that in certain companies that kind of have that type of clientele that are interested in that. And I'm wondering if it's going to take policy change in order to encourage all organizations, all private industry, to start trying to make that shift towards renewable resources instead of using plastic all the time.
Well, I think if Coral Gables will win this thing about Florida not being able to ban the banning of plastic bags, I think it'll make a big difference. And you also can vote with your pocketbook, and you can, for instance, I try to do as much of my shopping at Trader Joe's as I possibly can, because they do not have plastic. They don't have plastic even for putting your vegetables in. They have biodegradable bags that do that. They always have paper. We can do things with our pocketbooks in ways that is important too. So
you were the lead author for the third and fourth assessment reports of the Intergovernmental Panel for Climate Change and a review editor for the fifth assessment report. In 2007, the IPCC was co-awarded the Nobel Peace Prize with Vice President Al Gore. Can you talk a little bit about what these reports cover and how those are put together?
Well, mainly what happens is we get people who work on climate, scientists that work on climate from around the world, and there's over 2,000 scientists that get together. And they look at all of the literature that has been published since the last report. And what we try to do is put it into a language that is understandable by policymakers. So that here's all this. There's so much information out there. Policymakers can't find it all because it's spread all over everywhere. We pull it together into one report, and that then tells the policymaker and hopefully tells the world what's going on with climate change and what is happening and what needs to change and, you know, what we can do about it.
That had to be a frustrating exercise in recent years when there are people that are looking at scientific data and saying, no, I don't think so.
That's right. I have a bumper sticker on the back of my car that says facts matter. And that's really how I live my life, whether it be with climate change or with plastics. Facts really do matter, and you just can't ignore them. The climate is changing. We all know that it's getting warmer. I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, or Independent. We know that it's getting warmer. It's very clear that people are causing it. We have got to do something about putting so much CO2 into the atmosphere. There's just no getting around that at all.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, just this week we did a story where we went on a boat with Republican representative to the U.S. Congress, Rooney from Naples. He went out to Key Waden Island to talk about climate change and sea level rise, mainly pointing to sea mm-hmm. level rise and how that's impacting barrier islands and could impact the way that those barrier islands are able to protect the mainland when we have hurricanes and things like that. And this was a Republican that was kind of leading this conversation. Does it feel to you at all like maybe in the state of Florida, the environment and sea level rise and things are starting to be taken seriously by all parties?
I do think there's a change going on, and I think it is starting with many of the representatives from Florida. Curbelo, who was voted out this past time, but before that he was the first person to put in a bill that really wanted to curtail CO2. And he was a Republican, and he was from Florida, and he said, Florida is ground zero. We have got to do something about climate change. And I have a lot of respect for the representatives, particularly the Republican representatives from Florida that are fighting this, because they realize that their constituents' lives are, their happiness are hanging in the balance, and they need to do something about it. So they're true leaders. They're bucking what the rest of the Republicans are saying and really are going out and leading forward to try and do something about climate change.
And my last question that I want to ask you is, if you had a magic wand and you can make one fundamental change to our system in order to make the world a better place and the environment more healthy, what would that thing be?
We need to get off of our fossil fuel addiction. That's the main thing that I would do, is get off the fossil fuel addiction. We have to change to renewable energy. We have the technology. We can do it. We just have to have the political will to do it, and we can do it. The IPCC just came out with a report saying that by 2030, we have to really significantly reduce our fossil fuel emissions. And can we do it? They showed us how we can do that. It is possible to do it. We can. We just have to have the political will to do it. And America is no longer leading in this situation. The rest of the world is. We now need to follow the rest of the world and get off of the fossil fuel addiction.
Who should we follow? What are examples of places that are doing well and moving forward?
Denmark, Sweden, places like that, they have really gone into having wind turbines and doing something about changing their use of fossil fuels significantly. They've shown that wind turbines can work. I'm on the National Audubon Board, and National Audubon is very strongly supporting of wind turbines, because they realize that if we do not change and get off of our fossil fuel addiction, that we will actually be having extinction of species, and we have got to do something about the extinction of species. The IPCC said that if we go up by 2 degrees Celsius above natural, which is 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit above natural, we could lose 400,000 species on our planet. And I'm not real sure that it's morally right for one species, us, to actually cause the extinction of that many species.
Well, that's all the time that we have for this part of the show, but I really want to thank my guest.
Dr. Okay.
That was really an amazing conversation. Dr. Terry Root is a senior fellow emerita at the Woods Institute for the Environment at Stanford University. She's also a science advisor for the American Wind and Wildlife Institute and serves on the board of the National Audubon as a director and as assistant secretary. Dr. Root, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I really appreciate you doing the segment.
Her presentation, called Innocent Victims, Impact of Plastic on Wildlife, is coming up this Friday evening, starting at 6:30 at the Congregational United Church of Christ in Punta Gorda. You can find a link with more information on our website at gulfcoastlive.org. When we return, we're going to hear about a movement that started here in Florida to raise awareness about child abuse by encouraging men and women to paint their pointer fingers blue. It's called the Manicure Movement. We're joined by the CEO of the Children's Network of Southwest Florida to learn more. I'm Julie Glenn, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.